I'm Tony Chief. Are you Mr. Clement?
Yeah.
Did you come up here?
Mm-hmm. Go down there. Mm-hmm.
Taking time to meet with us.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm Eileen Arith. Nice to meet you.
Arith, nice to meet you. Eileen.
Yeah.
Tony.
Thank you, Mr.
McClure. Oh, yes. Or is it just the two of you?
Yes.
Can I get you a coffee or water or anything?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
Eileen, just Tony and I spoke yesterday. She mentioned that you guys have questions, and I let her know at the time she wanted to. I wanted a copy. I told her, don't send me anything in writing, because then it becomes like a FOIA request, and I've got to talk to the county attorney. So I'm hoping that having this conversation, I can give you information. You know, all the information that we can answer as many questions as we need to. I mean, as we can. And then anything, for one reason or another, I don't need to. I'm not afraid either to say that I don't know necessarily the answer.
Perfect.
So if there's anything that we have to come back to, certainly we'll get you the answers.
Okay.
One way or another. So, but hopefully we can get as much of it done today as we can.
I brought you a copy of the questions. Do you want to see them right
now? Yeah.
Okay.
Now
we're in front of them.
Right, because if we can't answer it, then we're end up in the same place.
Eileen's going to be our scribe. And I'm wondering if I can record so that if when we're looking at our notes.
This is a lot of open-ended.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to hope that works. Okay. I think that's recording. Okay. There. All right, so.
That's legal.
We're with Virginians for Election Transparency, and there's the website there, which is a nonpartisan group looking to educate citizens about the election process. And I will definitely speak for myself here. At 62, there is so much I do not know. And I have just reached a point in my life, like, I really want to learn.
Yeah.
So that's how I got involved here. So the aim of this group is to send teams of people out to each registrar in each county in Virginia and to compile all that information to show people some of the behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah.
And it's my understanding, I took notes, that things that are in law and in practice may be two different things. And not intentionally, but, I don't know. I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
Many people like me don't know.
Yeah.
And like if I become...
election official?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I'm not going to know everything, so there might be things unintentional that may happen, and
everyone in elections swears the oath to do the jobs to the best of their ability, right? We are certainly governed by code, but we're also governed by administrative so it's not just state code, but there's also an administrative code. That basically provides more instruction on how to do, how to follow the code, and then, and then even on top of that, there's guidance from the State Department of Elections, with the intention of ensuring uniformity, across the Commonwealth, and so it's one thing to say are things being done according to the law or the code, and then but what else? There is a lot to keep straight.
Yes.
That it has never been easier to vote in Virginia than it is in now. So what that means is, even just looking ahead to this first question, the biggest concern about the upcoming election is, there's always uncertainty in terms of, how voters will choose to vote, what process they'll decide works best for them to vote? And then how do we adapt to facilitate so that, you know, that so that we, you know, serve the voters in the ways that they want to be served, and with the number of legally available options to them to vote. So what that means is that, you know, for 45 days before the election, I mean, it ends up being, I think, 32 or 33 work days, you know, we'll have the ability for voters to vote in here in person before Election Day. So that means that we'll end up, you know, staffing, you know, doing, you know, basically all of the logistics that involve with running a polling place, you know, where it once was one day, it now becomes, you know, 32 or 33 days for every election. Mm-hmm. We don't know exactly how many voters are going to request to vote by mail. There are a number of people who voted by mail for the first time last year and really liked it, and that may be their new way to do things, right? So we're gearing up for what exactly those numbers are going to be, and then of course, you know, we worry. I mean, we know. That Election Day doesn't change, right? So, I mean, you know, those requirements in terms of staffing, you know, making sure that the lights are on, making sure that people can get in the doors, all of the original logistical concerns didn't go away just because new logistical concerns were added on top of it. So that's the biggest concern. And every election is always the uncertainty of how, It's just being able to adapt to what you don't know.
Was last year the first time that they could vote for 45 days before the election?
Or? Well, we always had absentee, but last year was the first time that it was, you know, the no excuse absentee.
Okay, yeah.
And so, it's, yeah, essentially, so in Virginia, it's wild. We almost don't have absentee voting anymore. Because, I mean, absentee voting as a thing existed as, like, this idea. I mean, really, where it really got the biggest impact was the military first, right? These mm-hmm. were people who were going to be absent mm-hmm. from their polling places. But absentee required an excuse, right? You had to have a reason why you weren't going to be there. Mm-hmm. So now, instead of that, what you've got is you've got early voting, because anybody can come in, I mean, a registered voter can come
and
in.
And come in,
come
that's
in,
the early
check
voting.
Check in and uh-huh. vote, right? Vote okay. then. And then mail is, you know, the same deal, right? And, so you're basically, instead of absent, now you've got early voting on the one side, you know, mail voting, vote by mail once, and then of course Election Day, so three pots. And so, and because of course all this is still so new, we're still trying to figure out where are the natural numbers going to fall. What percentage of voters in Culpeper are always going to want to vote early? What percentage are always going to want to vote by mail? What percentage are always going to want to vote on Election Day? And so much of what I do is, well, maybe it's just the way I do it. I mean, right, for everybody, every job, there's people who bring their own personalities or you know, and for me, this is a logistics. I mean, it's the same as, you know, it'd be like doing a man of ministry, you know, one
yep.
of these, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
you got to staff it. It's based right. upon what your percentages are.
Yeah, you don't know how many people are coming for lunch, but you know, mm-hmm. you got to have food for everybody who shows up. Mm-hmm. So here, we don't know how many people are going to show up in each of these individual yeah. ways, but they've got to have a ballot when they get there, and we've got to be able to know that the process is consistent and legal, you know, mm-hmm. when they do.
Okay.
So, but your answer to number two is the other thing that ties into it here is still it's definitely COVID, but I don't know if that's like reaction to COVID or what that is. But what I mean is it just totally changes public perception of how they want to vote. So, so it may be that, whereas what would be normal would be, let's just say 1,000 people want to vote by mail, and that's like the default number for Culpeper, you know, in the next 20 years it'll be like that.
How is vote by mail different than absentee?
So it's not, except what I'm saying is, the reason when I say that absentee basically doesn't exist anymore, is that everyone who votes outside of their polling place on election, right, everyone who doesn't go to the polls on election day is technically voting absentee. But the reality is that absentee, I mean,
doesn't really exist because you don't have to have an excuse anymore.
Exactly.
Because I asked for an absentee ballot for my son in college.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so he had to fill that out, and then I had to bring it in here. You know.
But you have to request to get a mail-in.
To request by mail, you still have to fill an application. Mm-hmm. Now, however, but as of July 1, you can put yourself on the permanent by mail list. And so these are folks who now there's the real positive to come out of that is we have physically handicapped voters who can't get out of their house and call, you know, and then they're and it's a hassle. It was a hassle for them to have to contact us. So they could have gotten on an annual list where they were requesting a ballot every year, but that required them to take the form, go to the doctor, get all that filled out, get cleared that way, and then to reapply that form every year.
Right, now they don't have to worry about it.
Now they don't have to worry about it. So in those cases, it's great. Just like any other job, it's like 90% of the time is spent on 10% of the job, and we spend a lot of time here making sure that the voters who have the hardest time getting to us don't get lost. I mean, that's very important.
Mm-hmm.
All of us, myself included, we're all getting older. I'm in full blown middle age now. I get it. So this idea that somebody, I treat people like I want to be treated, or I hope to be treated. And I really think, so as I see my voters getting older, that I want to make sure that nobody, you know, drops off or misses their abilities or the rights to vote. Just because either it's too complicated or something changes and they just miss it.
Yep.
So.
Good. Okay.
And let's see. Do you feel like you have the resources, equipment, personnel, training needed to run an effective election in November?
Yes, I do. I'm really excited as of now, knock on wood, that we will be able to train in person. We'll be training our election officers in person this year, which is always great. In fact, I was thinking right before you got here how great it is to see you in person versus, you know, like a Zoom or something. It's sit at the table, ask the questions.
That's nice.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice change.
Very nice. We're going to skip 4. All right, number 5. County Election Board is supposed to consist of 2 Democrats and a Republican under a Democrat governor, but in some areas, boards have had trouble finding willing Republicans and have appointed an independent instead or another Democrat. What's the situation in Culpeper?
Right, in Culpeper, we have 2 Democrats and a Republican.
Okay, perfect. And what about precinct staff? Are you able to have equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans?
Yes, we are. This is a good question, but yes, I mean we have officers who are sent to us. Both parties here actively recruit. We certainly all of our polling places have Democratic and Republican officers. We ask all of our officers essentially to. It's a nonpartisan job. Mm-hmm. But we have no concerns about any of our precincts not being represented by both political parties.
Okay.
Let's see, is the County Board of Elections engaged in your work year-round or mostly near elections?
The Board of Elections certainly stays engaged with me in the office so that they're aware of everything that's going on here. But the reality of the code and the two separate sort of functions that are happening here is for the time that isn't specifically near elections, this is a voter registration office. The board doesn't really play a role in that. The answer that's closest here would probably be mostly near elections, but I would definitely emphasize that the Board of Elections is engaged, that they meet as required by code, and that it's definitely not a situation where they're not engaged or absent.
Okay. All right.
They're doing what they need to do.
Okay. So now some questions on the voter roll.
Okay.
And I had to change some word in here when I was getting my information.
Okay.
When was the last time the voter file in your county was scrubbed or cleaned?
Okay.
And so the person that used audit synonymously was scrubbed or cleaned. So when it says the number of days or the date since your last audit, it actually is scrubbed or cleaned.
Okay, so the voter files it's amazing, actually. This is not a paper job anymore, right? And it used to be that people there was one way to register to vote. You filled out the application, the application was filed, that was it,
mm-hmm.
right? So now most of our applications are actually generated through DMV transactions.
Oh, yep.
And we are constantly cleaning, what I mean by that is, so we're getting notices monthly of deaths and mental adjudications. And those are the deaths coming from the Bureau of Vital Statistics. So we just finished, the state just finished the National Voter Rights Act, or NVRA, process, which removes inactive voters from the rolls. These are voters who usually are flagged because we have an address mismatch, which usually indicates that they've moved. They haven't bothered to tell anybody. But once that flag hits, if they haven't voted, if they don't vote in two federal elections, then they're removed from the poll, from the poll books. So,
oh, really?
Yes. That's a constant process.
So is that like a person that does that, or is that done like automatically, like with a computer program?
So there'd be a question for the state of how that NVRA process, those are all actually, so they're initially flagged by, most are initially flagged by some kind of mismatch with the post office. So either mail that we send them is marked as undeliverable, and so then we flag them in our system, which generates this flag that says if these folks don't show up to federal elections, then they're going to end up scrubbed.
Mm-hmm.
We are as far as deaths, those records populate in a hopper in the state database that we use. So a person actually has to review them, and then basically click a button to mm-hmm. make sure that happens. In all of these cases, there is human and computer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't really rely solely on humans because we are human, right? And you forget
yeah.
things. You can't solely rely on a computer because sometimes computers are wrong.
Okay.
So that's definitely a process. But there is I am very it's the other thing, of course, is that unfortunately. People pass away every day. People move every day. So in any point in time, you know, there's always going to be some lag, right? But I am very confident that we've got good books. And the reason why I say that is not so much for like a scrubbing or cleaning, but because of the way that the DMV system is working now, a college student or somebody else, anybody who's moving, primarily young people are moving, then they're not having to remember to do something else.
Once they change their address on the DMV, you go right on DMV and it says, do you want to change your voter registration?
I did
that last year.
Yeah, and you have to opt out now instead.
Yep.
So yeah, before you had to choose to do that at the same time, and now they're catching it, which is making us busier, but it's awesome because it is so much nicer than trying to chase around people who you know, move and don't tell you. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. So I think there's just follows along. Does the health department, coroner, or Bureau of Vital Statistics send a list of deceased people to your office every month?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Number 10.
When was the last time the clerk of court submitted a list of individuals who declined to serve on jury duty on the basis of being a non-citizen?
Yeah, so we have done this. So I've been the registrar here for 6 years. It's been 2 or 3 years ago, but 2 years in a row, we went through this. We got all of the questionnaires from the clerk, exactly this, check non-citizen. And we went through all of it, and basically there was it ended up being I don't want to say it was a waste of time because it was good to know, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was eye-opening, the number of people who checked that they're a non-citizen on a jury questionnaire just to get out of jury duty.
Do you have to go in and check and see when
So a few of these people, we had to call
okay.
and say, what's going on? And then it was, they realized they had screwed up. but what we saw was that we checked every one of those 2 years in a row for everyone who'd marked the non-citizen, and I don't think we've found more than 4 or 5 that were even registered voters.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
So it just wasn't coming up.
Okay.
All right, so 11, when was the last time you had access to the National Change of Address List or any other change of address list?
So, I would say again that this is constant. Most of those NCOA, we're actually processing NCOAs as they come back. Now the state runs the process every summer. As far as a date, basically these are all,
Is this the same thing as the DMV or no?
No,
this is different.
So this is where people are flagged as being by the post office, usually having a change of address, right?
Oh.
So their address doesn't match the address we have on file for voter registration.
Okay.
This is also part of where I was talking about this, where these folks get flagged.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so what happens is that they get sent these NCOAs, and if they respond, then we correct it right then. Right. So the only time they would be removed after that process would be if they haven't responded to anything and they haven't voted, and then they get removed. That would be the scrub. Right.
Okay.
But this would be this is the back to that initial part of that process. We flag this person. Their addresses don't match. They it generates the letter to them, and then we deal with it right then. So the last time we had access to the list. I can tell you it at some point this summer. So that NCOA process happens every summer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also another one of those great automated processes that catches people who are most of the time it's out of state, who are just moving and forget to tell us.
So it sounds like even though you get the whole list every summer, it's still on a even every month, if somebody comes in and gets it, that's kind of like how you, not necessarily the list, but you're just still constantly planning it.
Where it's confusing is the list. So the state generates the letter.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't ever have to pull the list. I would see the results of the list, right? So I would see so people who've been sent that notice, please tell us where you live, and the person fills it out and mails back to us. Those are the ones that we're seeing. So there's nothing directly by that NCOA, that first hit on that NCOA, that's going to, you're not going to immediately have to take action there. And if you did, you'd probably just as likely hit as many people who you shouldn't be doing anything, right? I mean, who are just, at that point you're counting on someone picking up every single piece of mail that comes to them in the mailbox, and reading it and responding to it. But I do want you to know, I mean, that NCOA is a big part of what we do here, because really that's why we're here.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's to register people to vote and make sure that the books are good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Then number 12, just make sure I'm doing that good. Are you confident that the voter file is accurate and up to date?
Yes. But again, with the caveat that, even in the course of the time that we're sitting here at this table, something is changing.
Yeah.
So, but again, and what I'm really confident is that we're doing the work every day to make sure that it is. So that there's not a day in this office where we're not processing some information that's making that voter file better than it was the day before.
Number 13, how many households in our locality have more than 7 individuals registered at the same address? And
you may not know
right.
this.
Yeah. That's a great question. So, this is one that I'll circle, and I'll have to circle.
Because they're saying something about like people rent, and then they may rent, and then they leave, and they re-rent, it's got a lot of people registering.
I appreciate that, for sure. So that's a good question. So, and then I'll find, let me, yeah, no, I'll figure out the best way. Whatever the best way is to get you that information. So it may be that the best way is that that the state provided in a list, because they can give you a list of all the registered voters that would be like in a spreadsheet where you could, I guess you could probably do some sort of formatting on it that would tell you, would flag any address that showed up more than 7 times.
But that's not something that you all really deal with here. Okay.
But one way or another, I'll get you an answer on this.
Okay. All right. So 14, during registration, how do you verify that voters are citizens?
So any application that that we enter, so anyone who's flagged as being a non-citizen, there is a list of non-citizens that were, we don't do anything specifically in this office. There would be no, of course, most people registered to vote were born here. To prove citizenship would be, honestly, I mean, without it, I mean, the answer to this question is, anyone who is identified by the system as being a non-citizen is flagged and denied. And then I think and I don't mean that in a way to be, but I guess what I'm saying is, legally, I'm not allowed to ask somebody for a birth certificate to register to vote. That one is beyond my pay grade.
Okay. All right, let's see. Moving on, concerns were raised across the country about the accuracy and integrity of voting machines in the 2020 elections. There are 3 types of voting machines used in Virginia. Which ones were used in Culpeper?
Yeah, so we use the ES&S DS200s.
Can you say that again?
Sorry. ES&S, it's an election something and systems. And we use the DS200, and that's the scanner.
Okay.
And that, yeah, and that's the, I mean, we use their express votes, but that's not a machine. It's a ballot marking device for disabled, I mean, for anyone who might be
right.
visually.
Okay.
And I actually think that there are more than three. So you may go back and say, I think ESNS One Heart is another company. Dominion. I think they're probably four or five.
Okay.
Yeah. So who calibrates the machines? Well, so the calibration. So that's interesting. I think calibration it's funny. So for me in elections, calibration is what we used to have to do with like the touch screen equipment. You would calibrate the screen to make sure that if my finger touched this button, that it was going to register as that button, right? And so when I think about calibrating the machines now, what we do is we do logic and accuracy testing. And so the electoral board is responsible for that. We also have an equipment custodian who assists the board with that process. And what that involves is that the board takes a deck of ballots that are marked in such a way that we know what the result of that stack should be.
Mm-hmm.
They feed them through every machine. They then print the tapes to show the results. The results match.
They should match.
Yeah.
Right?
So as long as I've been here, the results have matched. The results match. Then they clear the ballot, reset them to zero, and lock the equipment up and seal it.
Okay.
So when the election officers open that equipment, unseal it at the beginning of the day, and they print a tape, the tape is showing that there's zero ballots recorded on that machine. In that way, we know that the machines are reading the ballots the way that they're supposed to, and that there's nothing on them.
So do you, like when you have it open here, mm-hmm. do you do that every day to make sure it reads zero, or is there a constant running on that machine that's here? Like I know I voted here.
Right. So we wouldn't be able to do that.
You keep it running total, right?
Because it's, okay. Exactly. So we're able to power on and off the machine at night. We calibrate that machine before we start. We make sure that it's right, it's reading the ballots through this. When we start that process on day one, there mm-hmm. are zero ballots cast in mm-hmm. the machine.
Mm-hmm.
And then every day we're tracking the number of people who check in to vote. And every day we're checking to make sure that that's the number of ballots the machine is reading at the end of the day.
Do
you invite party representatives to witness the calibration or
yes.
the?
Yes, we do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's usually, yes, it's one representative per party, so we alert the party chairs.
Okay. All right, voting machines, and I believe the word they told me to use instead was optical readers.
Okay.
Ever connected to the internet?
No.
No, if not.
How and when are they updated?
So this is another interesting question, right? So I don't know if this means some. So we're on an annual maintenance contract with Printelect, who is the company that serves the ESNS equipment. They're the ones who sold it to us. At the time that they sold it to us, we said the contract says you all will perform an annual. So any updates that need to be done, right? So we're at some point in the next, it'll be after November, but before next summer, I know that they'll be doing some updates.
Okay. So that's just a yearly thing.
So they're on, they're contracted that anytime any kind of updates would be required that they will do it. But there is never in, there's no ability to remote into these to the equipment to update that way.
So many changes in election procedures were introduced in response to the COVID pandemic, and some people have argued these changes weaken the integrity of the election process. As an election professional, do you think the changes made in the election process in Virginia in response to COVID have weakened election integrity, strengthened election integrity, or made no change in election integrity?
I'm thinking specifically to changes in election procedures. See, it's so hard because so many other things were changing at the same time. This is an interesting question across the board, and personally in this office, I would argue that these changes made no difference, that made no change in the integrity of the election process, because we were always concerned about the integrity of the election process. That never wavered. It certainly didn't make any changes in the way that we were doing our jobs. I mean, I understand that other people may have another opinion on that, but I'm just in terms of the logistics and what's involved in from my perspective, there is nothing that could happen that would change our dedication to making sure that we're doing everything right. That's something as simple as, it was before my time, but the earthquake day in here, there was a primary going on at the time. They had to leave this office, but you just do it, right? You roll with mm-hmm. it. That's why I appreciate so much you all being here. If there's no confidence in our ability to do this job, then there's no reason for us to be here.
Right. So I guess the way I was reading this too is like, okay, so with the COVID, they because of COVID, I guess they made it so that you can do more mail-in votes. You know,
right.
To me, I don't think that was there until COVID came, and then that's when and I could be getting
right.
kind
right,
of
that's
wrong,
right,
but that's
right.
And I'm not saying yay or nay,
right.
But I guess do you feel that stuff like that, how you handle it, is probably. You're saying it doesn't change just because we have thousands of mail-ins as opposed to not. It doesn't really change how you do what you do.
Exactly.
Is
yeah.
what you're saying.
And so it's so interesting, right? So, so many of our absentee mail voters, right? So we have three major categories. One is, of course, military and overseas. And these are the same folks that we basically developed relationships with them because we know they're counting on us, right? The second is, people who literally can't leave the house,
mm-hmm.
and just over time. I mean, Culpeper is a great place to live. It is a great place to do this job because it's not big enough yet that you do develop these relationships. You know people, right?
Right.
And so. But the three categories are definitely military and overseas, college students, and then those who physically can't get here
right.
or to a polling place. The only big change. The ability to be able to vote to apply for that mail ballot without. An excuse, or as COVID is the excuse,
mm-hmm. right?
I apologize if this is, it's wild because we've run three elections here since November, And so they all, you know, so you're right, so they all, but I thought, yeah, so no excuse for mail was already in place. So so COVID itself would not have increased, you know, COVID obviously increased the amount of mail, but nothing specific to COVID would have been responsible for changing that. The only thing that I guess that came up from COVID was the would be the lack of the witness requirement, and for those. But the thing that was so interesting, I mean, what we were seeing, I mean, we were getting calls from voters who literally had no one who could come in the house.
Yeah.
And then what, right? And so, these are the ones that. I mean, these are people who...
Those are the ones you already knew anyway.
Right,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really were, but these are the people... I don't know. I mean, it sounds weird to say it. I mean, I'm supposed to be this, you know, bureaucrat sitting at the desk. But you do care about... I mean, I care about the people who vote in Culpeper County.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's amazing because Culpeper is a very diverse community with people who vote for all kinds of different candidates. And it doesn't matter to me. So,
yeah.
This is, it's not a job. It's definitely an avocation. I mean, you're so,
yep.
I think it's a good question, but I think that it's hard to say anything about COVID because, and this is probably national, I mean, that the laws change so frequently that you have to be able to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay.
20. Did you receive any funding or in-kind contributions for training, staff, voter education, or equipment, or any other purpose from outside the state of Virginia?
Yes. So, and I'll have to get back to you on this one too. So we did receive grant funding, but I'll have to get back to you with what the specifics were. But it was, definitely used. Most of it was used for staff, because we, because of COVID, we mailed 6,000 ballots. Which requires people.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then we were also through the state, or actually, there might have.
So just something
so
outside
CARES,
of state.
CARES Act funding would have been federal, right, or Virginia. So that's a good question too. But we also received CARES Act funding that we would have used for. I'll get back to you with this, but we definitely did all of that. We purchased some new equipment, and we definitely did use some staff, and we ended up we did some hazard pay for staff too. Not me, but.
Mm-hmm. But when you buy new equipment, it's only that ESNS or whatever.
That's
it was?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
21, effective July 1st, 2021, Senate Bill 1097 eliminated requirements for voters to have a witness signature on absentee ballots for any election declared during a state of emergency. The governor has now rescinded the state of emergency. How are you training your staff to ensure there is a signature match for the upcoming elections?
That's the other, bright side. So we're a staff of 2.5. It's nice. I mean, training is ongoing. It's every day. It's interesting because we had a special election in March, which also required witness signatures. We go through this process. The nice thing is in Virginia, because we have elections all of the time, I mean, you're doing it every year, multiple times a year, these become beyond training. I mean, this becomes, this is part of the procedures that we know that we're dealing with. So I've had the discussion with staff. They know that what the requirements are going to be, and not only to match the signature, but everything that's required in order to make sure that the ballot is cured when it comes back. Because we're also, meaning if information is missing, if those ballots come back with information that isn't there, then we're also required by code to contact the voter to give them the opportunity to fix it.
Oh.
So, yes.
Okay.
Is that new? Or it's always been that way?
I think that's new. I mean, there have been some that law making it permanent is new, but we've had to deal with it since last year. Okay. Yeah. But in Culpeper, to be honest with you, in Culpeper, we were curing ballots all the time because we didn't get enough back that we couldn't, but it didn't make, we're not, We have no interest in making it prohibiting. I mean, if we can contact a voter to get it fixed, we want to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do not take any joy in in someone not being able to vote.
Okay. Thank you. 22. There's a lot of concern in Virginia and across the country about security and integrity of the ballot drop boxes. Mm-hmm. What are the chain of custody procedures for ballot drop boxes?
I guess the big question is, do we have ballot drop boxes?
Right. Yes. So we are required by code. I guess you can't see it from where you're sitting. But we've actually...
That's we'll see it on the way out. Yeah.
So we've actually installed one physically here so that we're not... and this, some of this is... some of these are electoral board decisions. Some of these are things that we can do in the office. So drop boxes, that would specifically be the purview of the electoral board. But in conversations with the board, we are not interested in sticking a box somewhere that has to have a 24-hour-a-day camera, that has to have 2 years' worth of video surveillance backup. And essentially, by the time you're done, it's a $2,000 or $3,000 box with a $100,000 price tag on it.
Wow.
I mean, if you're just thinking about all of that video and everything that's required to deal with that. So we don't do it. So, but we have the box. We're required by code to have the box. So if somebody comes here and wants to drop up ballot, they put them in the slot. It's lockable on the other side. And then the only access to the drop box is behind the door to our office.
So when your office is closed?
Yeah, you cannot.
You can't do it.
And it's interesting, anecdotally, my sister-in-law lives in Richmond. She had an absentee ballot she wanted to drop off at their drop box last November. And she could see it from the door, but it was after there were people inside, mm-hmm. and they were like, sorry, can't help you. So I don't think it's unusual necessarily to have the box in such a way that people can't access it 24/7.
Yeah.
And so, but the interesting thing, so I don't know if it's still there. I know, a block and a half south, there's a big blue drop box in front of the U.S. Postal.
Mailbox.
Right, the mailbox. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, so I'm just like, right, so we're sending ballots. Postage prepaid, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
And so, and there used to be one right there in the AP, right on Davis Street. Another mm-hmm. mailbox there. And so,
So you're considering that kind of a drop box?
Exactly.
It is. You're right.
Yeah.
But I think they're thinking of
the drop box.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. And the biggest thing is, with a lot of these things, you're trying to balance making sure that you're doing a good job and making sure that voters can vote with being stewards of taxpayer dollars. And so some of this stuff rises to that level where it's very hard to justify. Mm-hmm. Like I said, sticking a box outside with the camera is just
too costly.
Yeah.
So then obviously 23 did not have video monitoring. No, you don't have that on your...
Yeah, we don't have an issue. So was there any time during the last election cycle when your drop box is in? So this is, but that's a, that,
So is there video monitoring in here?
There is no video monitoring.
Because you don't need it, because it's behind the locked thing.
Because there's no access to it. Yeah, the building is locked.
So then there is nobody responsible for reviewing that video.
Exactly.
Well, there you go.
Exactly.
That makes it easy.
All right.
Now, I know that won't be the case, you know, other places. But.
Right.
So to strengthen public confidence in the integrity of elections, we, the Virginia for Election Transparency, hope to expand our observation efforts and have a few questions about election pages, nonpartisan observers, and party observers. Mm-hmm. So would you provide training and support or designate us, being Virginians for Election Transparency, to provide training and support for an election day page program as described in 24.2604.
Okay. I think they were thinking like students, like trying to get students involved.
We've used them before, and I'm a really big fan of it. Specifically, that's an electoral board question. I will say, though, I'm going to, at this point, guess that we have used the page program in the past. I'm a big fan of it. I do not think we're going to use it in November.
Too soon, anyways.
I don't want to be responsible for anybody extra at a polling place. I don't even know what the numbers are. I don't know what the reality of COVID is, but I do know that I don't want the liability of having high school students as extra people at a polling place where we're inviting all kinds of people to come and vote when they're not, really, they're not a sworn, they're not officers. They're there serving in informational roles. We will definitely go back to this program in the future. This will ultimately be a decision made by the electoral board, not me.
Oh, you don't make that decision. No. Okay. Because what they were saying was maybe not even for November, but
right.
In the future, would you train them, or would you want this group to train? They would love to come and train people.
Right.
Would you be doing
that? That's an interesting question. So we, in the past, we have provided the training. This is certainly a question that we can circle back to in the future.
Okay.
All right, then this 26 is the same thing for nonpartisan election observers with the same rights as party representatives as described in 24.2604.5A.
Yes, this is one I would have to get back to you on. Because this again may be an electoral board. We have historically not authorized nonpartisan election observers. I only remember one. There was one case where someone from some group from a foreign country was coming, and we didn't authorize it. The thought there, but again, this is a question for the board. But the thought there is on election day, the election officers who are in the precincts it's my job as their boss, basically, to make sure they can do their job. I don't want to add any stressors that any more stressors than have to be there, right? And it's fine. The interesting thing is, on paper, it's fine, right? What you're trying to say is, so now I've got another person in the polling place who may or may not know what they're there to do, and then it's how do my election officers know how to
deal with that,
interact or not interact? In most cases, it's a not interact. Right. But again, I mean, this is a great question that I'll get back to you. I'll talk to the board about it.
Well, then 27 is similar. Would you authorize international nonpartisan observers from recognized election monitoring organizations?
It's a good question. So, I'm laying through in my head the sort of why we wouldn't, but that's not final, and it's not even. I mean, I want you to know that I certainly see both sides of this.
Mm-hmm.
It may be that that's, you know, that may be one of those changes I was talking to you about, where you adapt to the change.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Okay, but the electoral board decides,
exactly.
You're saying.
Yeah.
Where is the electoral board, by the way? Who is the electoral board? Is that Richmond?
No. So,
it's here.
Yeah, Culpeper County has a 3-member electoral board.
Okay.
Two appointed by the Democratic Party and one by the Republican Party. So Clive Richmond, who you may or may not know,
I just know that name.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So he's the Republican representative for the board. And then James Holmes is the chair, and Tracy Neely, and they are the Democratic members of the board.
Okay. So. Thank you.
Yeah.
So 28th, have your local party chairs been notified they are entitled to send observers to your office each day it is open and receiving in-person absentee ballots?
During an election.
Right. So, and this is just this, but this is specifically for the upcoming election, I'm guessing, in general.
I think it's just in general during elections. Mm-hmm. Are they, have they been aware that they can come in here and watch when, like in the 2020?
Right. Just send observers. Well, I mean, the Democratic Party sent observers here last year. That's a good question.
You don't know if you've told them. Yeah.
Know.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Okay.
And then 29, do you have a publication that you provide to your election officials regarding rights and responsibilities of observers?
Yes. Yes, we do.
Okay. And I don't need to ask you part B.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just want to thank you
taking
this time with us. We deeply appreciate your time and hope that you will couple that you'll
definitely will. Hopefully the next day or so.